de Jonathan Sexton.
Oh, il s'en fout tant qu'il
passe. C'est terrible. Il est là, Jonathan Sexton.
Oh, we're looking for another one. It's Canning once again, firing it in from near the sideline. It's a miracle shot. It's gone over the bar.
This is beyond cruelty. This is sadism at its worst. It is beyond belief that a team that gives so much that those fellas give today are on the wrong side of that result.
And fighting is there! Robbie Brady brings us all to our feet in Rio.
We're going to begin this podcast by declaring that there will be no discussion of the penalty taker situation at Manchester United, and instead we'll be revelling in the beauty of Ruben Neves' goal for a solid 45 minutes.
I'd also like to say there will be zero discussion about whether Richie Hogan shouldered Cathal Barrett or whether he elbowed him, and whether or not a red card was a worthy decision by James Owens. We will not be talking about
exactly
that.
My name is Mark Farrelly, that was Mick McCarthy, and this is The Build-Up in association with Ladbrokes, where we choose to look forwards, not backwards, as we build up the anticipation for the upcoming sporting weekend. Of course, Mick, we will look backwards if we're going to actually revel in our own brilliant predictions that we made on last week's podcast.
Well, yeah, of course.
But more of that later. But this week we will be chatting to Stephen Ferris as we look ahead to Ireland against England in the World Cup warm-up on this Saturday. We'll also be looking ahead to the Premier League. We'll be picking our 1-2-3 picks. We'll be I'm all in, Mick, on the Tour Championship now.
I know.
We talked about it last week with the BMW Championship. It's the Tour Championship this weekend. So we're becoming big golf aficionados here. We'll be doing that. And we'll also have our big shout, of course, and seeing if anybody has gotten a big shout correct from the listeners as well. But first up, Mick, we need to look back. What did we do last week? What did we predict? I kind of buried my head in the sand with the Premier League because I got everything wrong. But did we manage to get anything actually right?
We're more in a little bit of anger this week, I think, that we are looking back than we did last week, where we absolutely nailed our first show. But there's a lot of wins in there, and one in particular, Mark, that came from your good self, that I think made it a positive week. So we, you know, again, as I said, a mixed bag. City, we had Man City to beat Spurs, right, which is a result that I think everybody in the world... Yeah, you watch 90 minutes of that, there's no way that shouldn't happen. However, we did mix it with under 2.5 goals in the game. That was at 6-5. That didn't come true. We were nowhere near it, to be honest, because it was a 2-2 draw that should have been a 3-2. We won't mention why, because that's another thing we won't be talking about on the show, VAR. The All-Ireland final, then, we had 3 bets, right? This was a little bit less. I feel like we were unlucky, at least in one of these. We had 4 more goals in the game. It was a 4-5 bet. We were 1 away. There was a few kind of chances at the end. You think if it was a closer game, there probably would have been another goal in it. Because it wasn't a closer game, we also lost 4 points or less, or a draw. Margin of victory. That was another defeat. However, we did claim some glory back. One of my ones, Seamus Callaghan to score anytime, 4-5. It was, you know,
written in the stats.
That's as good as a free bet as you're ever going to get. Right, I'm going to the golf is what really saved us, though. If you're going to say that sounds like a bad week, we had a really good week. We're completely up because you had a little bit of a tip for the BMW Championship.
I'm the guy. I know my golf inside out, despite the fact that I wouldn't know which end of the club to hit the ball with. Hideki Matsuyama. 45-1, goes and breaks the course record on Friday. It was incredible. Incredible
it was
scenes.
Literally insane. I couldn't believe it. You were texting me at 12:30 at night. I was asleep. I saw it the next morning. So he's gonna break the course record here, Mick. And he did. And then fell apart on the Saturday, but held it together on the Sunday and got his each way money.
Issue was that Justin Thomas broke the course, then broke his record on the following day with a round of 61. So poor Hideki. But he got, like we're saying, he came in each way, which I was more than happy with. Which also means that he was outside the top 30. He actually was still outside the top 30 in the FedEx Cup race after Thursday's play, which he'd shot, I think it was 3 or 4 under. But he has now stormed up the leaderboard and he starts the Tour Championship this weekend at 3 under par. We'll have more of that later on.
Oh, yeah. You can explain that to me and the listeners again, just in case we've new listeners, and also because I don't really remember how it works from last week. So, but Matsuyama was 45-1 on Ladbrokes, which gave us a really nice 9-1 each way kind of win there. So that's sort of like, again, if you're following us, please, it's a bit of fun, small amounts. Gamble responsibly, of course, if you are following us, as we're doing. Like, I mean, we're talking We're talking minuscule amounts here from our or side.
Theoretical bets.
But we're up because if you get a 9-1 winner and you're only having 6 bets in a week, the other thing that we did say, and I don't know if anybody, you know, we might have saved a few quid for people here, was that you warned people stay away from Brooks Koepka. He is not going to win or contend at the BMW. And he absolutely did not.
He didn't. Now, to be fair,
you calling out Brooks Koepka here, like, I mean, he's about to say, enemy of the pot.
You're giving me nearly too much credit here, because all this was based off Sportsline.com's simulation where they'd simmed it, I think it was 10,000 times, and they had said that Koepka didn't perform. And also, Koepka has bad form in the BMW Championship, to be fair. Over the last few years, I don't think he's come close to winning it. So there was kind of that too. But look at, I think he finished outside, I think it was 24th, 25th in the end. So he was a long way off.
Yeah, we're going to do the Ladbrokes 1-2-3 in a while. But just to point out, between me and you, one of us are off the mark. Mark, yes. I finally got a result right. Chelsea and Leicester 1-1. Called it here in the show. Look, I got my Euro free bet. I'm thinking about what to do with it. It's sitting there in my account. Got my €1 free bet. You get €5 free bet if you get 2 of them right, or £100, which isn't bad if you get 3 of them right. But I'm off the mark here, so I'm going to just take it to the next level this week. And finally, the big shout. It was my turn this week to try and win a bet of over 25-1. It ended up being about 50-1. If anybody wants to do this again, the prize being 2 cakes and a sports biography. I didn't win the 2 cakes and sports biography this week. I came so close though, Mark.
Yeah, well, you came so close in if getting half the
Arsenal won, they beat Burnley. Everton beat Watford. Liverpool beat Southampton. I was on the way. Only for a miracle that City didn't beat Spurs. And the fact that Aston Villa lost and Seamus Callaghan scored the second goal in the All-Ireland final and not the first goal, which was 4-1. But I'm not that far off. I was the Villa result away. They were 2-0 down after 8 minutes.
You were the Villa result away and the other two results.
From being close.
From being...
Christ stick almighty. With us, lads. We'll get a big shout in here. I'm getting these 2 cakes. And can we name our own biography, or do you just get a random one?
You get a random one.
Okay.
Whatever one's hanging around the office. But
that was last week though.
Maybe Mick, I don't know about listening to you, but one man we should definitely be listening to is Stephen Ferris. He called Ireland not to beat the handicap against Italy. This weekend they're facing a much tougher task against England. Have we got a hope of winning it? Let's chat to Stephen and find out. Stephen, we had you on a couple of weeks ago and you said that Ireland wouldn't come within an ass's roar of beating the handicap, and you were dead on. You must be parading around proud as punch the last couple of weeks.
And the handicap was a close one in the end, but I think the way Ireland played, it felt like Ireland were going to win by 50 or 60 points. And when I said that and I looked at the Italian team, the way they were tiring, and you know, there's a lot of heart and a lot of passion from the Italians like you always get, but they just seemed like they were just going to fizzle out and Ireland were going to run away with it. But I think just the Irish display, the amount of mistakes that they made, the substitutes, you know, Joey Carberry getting off injured, and there's just a number of things that didn't really go their way. And even coming into the last couple of minutes, I was fairly sure that the handicap was going to be safe enough. And thankfully, the couple of quid that I had on it was safe as houses.
So to see, you've built up a reputation now here already in this podcast. You're going to have to, we'll have everyone hanging on every word you say this week. Just looking ahead to this weekend, obviously, Gordon Darcy was saying in his column today that this Twickenham game, it matters more than it should in terms of that last week or a couple of weeks when we were chatting about it, that, you know, these games, somebody's just getting game to me or whatever. But given the form of England, our own struggles, would that be something you'd agree with, Gordon, that there's actually more writing on this game than just a simple World Cup warm-up game?
I think I'd probably disagree slightly. I think it's the last thing you want to do is go away from home against an English side who's going to be in the mixture come the latter stages of the World Cup as well, hopefully, along with Ireland. I think Ireland just don't want to go over there and get a bit of a beating. You know, the last thing you want to do is have a 30 or 40 point scoreline on you against, you know, one of your biggest competitors, and you know that doesn't do a lot for team morale and that type of thing. I think if they go over there, put in a good performance, a good showing of themselves, but come away with a loss, I don't think that's the end of the world. You know, I can flip it back to 2011. We lost all 4 games before getting into the World Cup and actually found a bit of form when we landed in New Zealand. So I think it's more of the performance and not coming away from this game with a big defeat. And obviously, if they can go over there and get a nice little win, it does a hell of a lot for the camp.
Yeah, is it a difficult balancing act for Joe in terms of, like, you see people might be critical of, oh, we're not seeing anything new from this Ireland team, or do you know any sort of new attacking strategies or stuff like that? But at the same point, you don't want to go out to, against England now or against Wales in a couple of weeks and show your hand too early before you get into the tournament.
Again, I just think sometimes you got to play what's in front of you. They did that a couple of times against Italy. You look at Chris Farrell getting in the first receiver and pulling the ball back for Joey Carberry to go through and get a nice try. And I think we didn't really see enough of that last year, especially in the Six Nations. A lot more out the back plays. I think there is a lot more to come from this Irish team. Will Joe Smith show his hand in the next couple of weeks? What are they working on behind closed doors? They were in Portugal all week at the campus training in warm weather. You know, what are they working on? Because if they don't change their game plan from what they had last year in the Six Nations, then in my personal opinion, it's not going to be a very successful World Cup, because they do need to change what they were doing last year. They just can't keep running into brick walls against big, physical, strong teams. And, you know, you're going to lose one or two players, and we always talk about it, you're going to lose one or two along the way, and you've got to alter your game plan for each team that you come up against. And I think Joe Smith's a very shrewd coach, and he's shown how good he's been over the last number of years for Ireland. And I think come the World Cup, Ireland are going to show something different. They have to show something different to make history and get us into a World Cup semi-final, a World Cup final. It would be unbelievable.
Stephen, I'm absolutely intrigued and curious from a player's point of view what these games are like, because we're talking about, like, ultimately what we're going to go into is we're trying to get combinations right. We're trying to get, you know, get a feel of how players are that might be on the fringes of the squad. And you're just trying to get up to speed rather than worrying about the result. But, like, you know, there's always that joke about, you know, there's test matches in rugby and not friendlies. But I suppose the reason for that is because you can't play rugby half-hearted. You know, you'll get injured if you go in, you know, at not a full pace. But what's in your mind when you go out to play these games, knowing that it's not do or die, but you have to go at full pace while you're playing?
Yeah, you know what, that was something I couldn't get my head around watching the Irish team against Italy. You know, guys that are fighting and jockeying for positions, like Tommy O'Donnell and, you know, Jordy Murphy in the back row, and I thought those guys would be going out and absolutely destroying everything in front of them. And I think Tommy O'Donnell caught a ball off the kickoff and he just ambled back into contact, and, you know, then Ireland cleared their lines, and I was like, geez, this guy is fighting for a place on the plane here. You know, give me that ball. If that was me and I was in the exact same position as him, I would be running 100 miles an hour and trying to get a gain line, make an impact on the game, set a standard that had kind of been missing in the previous 40 minutes that went before that carry. And it just didn't seem like it was there. I know it was a test match against Italy, but being at the game, the atmosphere, the standard of the rugby, the amount of mistakes, and both teams just seemed happy enough to go through the 80 minutes and get, you know, 80 minutes of test rugby under their belt. And I think, you know, lads this weekend have really they've got to step it up another 15 or 20% in my eyes, because if they don't, then they could be on the end of a bit of a beating, because England seem to be back to their physical best. You know, they had a defeat against Wales, but they certainly have a lot more to give.
And if they don't step it up, so we played three games that are kind of like worried about getting injured and getting, you know, in theory up to pace, you know, what are the, you, can you get to the stage then where suddenly we're playing Scotland in 4 or 5 weeks time and suddenly hit the ground running if you haven't built it up to a full kind of like test match pace? Like, you know, it's basically your first game of the season if you haven't gone all at it in one of the friendly games.
Absolutely not. Like, you need to be at that test match level, because you can be sure that first game against Scotland is going to be, you know, all hell breaking loose. The ball's going to be in play for a significant period of time. It's going to be super physical. You know, it's just everything is on the line. You want to make a statement in your first game of a World Cup. And if you're the previous four games, if you're just going about your business, trying to pick up a little win against Italy at home and maybe against Wales, and, you know, everybody's happy, the camp's injury free, okay, you know, going forward in the tournament, that might be a good thing. But I personally believe that you need to play at that intensity a couple of times where the ball is in play, where there's not that many mistakes, and you get that feel-good factor that when you actually walk off the pitch and you get a result, you're happy with it. And at the weekend or 2 weekends ago when Adam walked off the pitch, it was just this feeling like, ah, oh, geez, lads, you know, I was it was just getting another game under the belt. It didn't feel like it was a good victory against Italy, and you know, it was test match rugby standard, because it certainly wasn't. Everybody who watched the game and was at the game certainly could get that feeling that it wasn't an Irish performance or an Irish win that you're going to remember, eh?
Yeah, actually, I was going to ask you: would you see it as a big advantage for England having come off the top of or off the back of two full pace games against Wales that they were going? It's going to be an advantage for them. But really, maybe it's just what we need, that it's the medicine that, you know, these guys go out on. If England hit the ground running on Saturday, that, you know, 20 minutes in, some players will be thinking, "Holy hell, we're in a game here, and we need to buck up quickly."
No. Again, you could be right. Possibly, you could be right. I think Ireland need to go full bore. They need to put all their big guns out. Johnny Sexton needs game time. Conor Murray needs game time. You flip it back to the Six Nations, and you know, Johnny Sexton hardly played any minutes, and Owen Farrell played lots and lots of minutes before that first game against England. And Owen Farrell was absolutely sublime that day. And England, you know, put in a massive shock. So it's about getting match minutes. And I think some of the big players this weekend need those minutes, and it's not going out and playing 20 minutes half-heartedly. Like, we need to go out and play a test match standard, like we've, you know, we've been talking about for the last 10 minutes. So, you know, possibly, you know, the guys might be fresh getting into this weekend, but they got to pitch up, and they got to get. I think one of the big things for me is everybody's walking around now talking about Irish rugby in a slightly negative way, in terms of, oh geez, lads, you know, the boys aren't looking that good for the world. They weren't that great against Italy. They had a poor Six Nations. You know, I think they got to get a bit of a feel-good factor around the place again, get everybody talking positively about Irish rugby. And how do you do that? You go away to Twickenham, you put in a really good performance, a real physical performance, and you put it up to them, and you know, maybe get come away with a victory, which then gets everybody back on their feet and really positive about the World Cup, because it's... It has been difficult over the last couple of months to regenerate that again from what, 18 months ago.
Yeah, exactly. We were actually just chatting about that this morning in the office, in that, you know, it's not that long ago we're beating New Zealand, we're winning Six Nation Championships. Yeah. Do you think we're actually that far away from that kind of form again, or is the pessimism kind of almost something that's right?
Yeah, I think we just we're peaking well, and the momentum was behind us, and everybody goes, oh yeah, momentum is always a big word in sport, and like, for sure, if you get off to win and start in the Six Nations, like, it makes the next four games, you know, a lot easier, and it's exactly the same as that in a rugby calendar season. If you keep the momentum going, when you come up against New Zealand, when you come up against England at Twickenham, and everything's on the line for a Grand Slam, you know, you have a lot of confidence that you're able to do it. So I think Ireland, they're not far away, to answer your question. I don't think they are far away. But they've got to start hitting their straps. And if that's this week or in a couple of weeks' time, for me personally, I've been in the guy's shoes. I just hope they put in good performances over the next few weeks and hit the ground running when it comes to Japan. And if they can do that and get to a semi-final, then, you know, all the talk about the poor Six Nations that they had before the World Cup, and, you know, not particularly good preparation with the Joey Carberry injury and Johnny Sutton breaking his thumb, that will all be quickly forgotten.
Stephen, we're speaking of Joey Carberry and Johnny Sexton. We're looking at, you know, Ross Byrne and Jack Carty. Yeah. You know, I don't know. Like, my take would be maybe 40 minutes each on Saturday. But are you looking at this as kind of like the showdown to see who is it that takes that sort of third 10 spot? Especially that's so much more important now, given that we don't know really what the status of Joey's going to be.
Yeah. What's the story with Sexton? Like, is he going to be available for Saturday, or?
It's unclear at the moment. I think the sense is that he's not going to be playing.
I think the quote was he was sore after training, or he sat out training. I think there was a couple of lads, himself, Earls and Henshaw, had a bit of soreness. So that was.
So they're probably looking at the first Wales game for Johnny.
Yeah, I'd maybe agree with you, and lads, at 40 minutes each. Like, I like Jack Carey. I think he kicks the ball too much. When he came on against, you know, Italy, he just kicked the ball away, and you're kind of going, like, you know, you're more than 2 scores ahead, you know, just keep it going, let's try and play a bit of rugby and get a bit of gain line, and he just kind of kicked the corners. He kicked reasonably well, but I just think Ross Byrne, for me, just playing on that winning team mentality at Leinster over the last couple of years, but neither of them have huge experience when it comes to, international rugby on the big stage. So maybe this weekend is a good test to see where they are mentally. You know, are they do go score down, or you know, where's Jack Hardy's head, and what way is he going to have an impact on the game if that happens? So yeah, you could be right in terms of the two lads get a significant bit of game time each, and then Joe has a pretty big call to make after that.
Speaking of big calls, you're fast becoming the Oracle of Ulster. Tell us, what's your prediction for this weekend?
Has the spread changed, Danny? What's the spread at the minute?
So Ireland are +5, England -5 at the moment. So that's the way it is. Ireland 7-4 to win the game.
It might change slightly when the teams are announced. It'd be very interesting to see what England go with. But England has got so much strength and depth, and I think Ireland, they're in it. If you're talking that guys are sitting out training with a few niggles and tightness and soreness, I reckon if Ireland went over there and got within 10 points, that would be a pretty good day at the office. So for me, that +5, I fancy England by slightly more, 7-10 points win for England for me.
Well, England 6-10 points is 5-1, actually. I actually had that written down. I was thinking the same myself. So that's definitely an interesting one. Yeah, so you can get on Ladbrokes with that for 5-1.
It's funny the way it works out. Yeah, it's funny the way it works out. Like, everybody goes, I'll score. But if you go a score and the conversion's missed, then, you know, it's 5 points. But generally, there's always a penalty thrown in there as well. So
yeah,
8 points isn't a bad shout. And then if they do get the conversion, it's 10 points. So, like, you know, that 6-10 isn't really a bad shout. I'm expecting a lot more from Ireland. You know, they cannot go out and play that the way they did against Italy. I know there's probably the inside chat in the change room going, right, lads, make sure when you go out and speak to TV cameras, you know, great performance, good head out, well done, we got the victory, you know, minutes under the belt and all that. But, you know, you got to call spade a spade. It wasn't good enough. And if they perform like that against England, it'll be a lot more than 6-10 points.
Yeah, we haven't touched on England, actually, because, like, Eddie Jones named that team, you know, named the squad insanely early. So I suppose they're approaching these warm-ups in a very different way, as in, like, we know who's in. There's nobody fighting for their place. Let's go and see what we can get up. And obviously you've seen the difference in the intensity, I suppose, and the, like, test match style of the Wales game at the weekend. Like, you know, there's a chance that they're, you know, not necessarily better than Ireland, but just at a much higher pitch at the moment.
Yeah, and we've maybe named that squad to try and work on combinations. So when it comes to training, there's the five guys that are on the plane, or five back rowers that are on the plane to, you know, Japan, where at the minute in Ireland, there's a couple of guys jockeying for that last position. You know, they might be nipping in and out of team plays. And, you know, one guy might be hogging the jersey slightly more than the other because they want to be seen more by Joe. And, you know, there's all those kind of things happening around training. And, you know, for Eddie to do that, he's saying, these are my guys. I'm putting faith in them. They're going to go over to Japan. They're going to do a job for me. And he's probably sat in team meetings and said, guys, these are the lads that are going to do this. And, you know, that's the way it is. So there's probably a lot of settled guys in their camp, where Ireland there might be, you know, maybe half a dozen boys that don't know if they're on the plane yet or not. So, it's interesting, isn't it? It's the way it's all panning out. It's so many talking points around each game and the way each coach is going about their business. And it's going to be so intriguing to see, you know, who comes out on top in a couple of months' time.
Yeah, definitely. And Saturday's an interesting prospect as well. Stephen, thanks very much for taking the time to chat to us.
No worries, lads. Cheers. Thanks as always.
Great stuff there from Stephen. And I like his prediction of England win between 6-10 points. Gosh. I like it because it's win-win for us. Either England, they're not going to, hopefully we don't, unless we get beaten by more than 10 points, but I don't think we will. But either England win between 6-10, and Stephen was right for the second time in a row, mm-hmm. or Ireland play really well, narrow defeat, or get a win.
Yeah.
And it's happy days.
That 6-10 is 5-1, right? Which is, it's a nice number, you know? So if you wanted to, like, Ireland +5, you could also have a look at that. And then you're kind of really in best of both worlds. And then if we're hammered, it's just a bad bloody day. So you've lost two bets and your rugby team are probably useless and not going to win the World Cup.
I have to say, though, I'm a lot happier after listening to Stephen as well, because there seems to be just this air of pessimism and just hanging around Irish rugby for ever since, I think, even going into the Six Nations this year, for some reason we weren't as confident, and then it proved to be the case.
Definitely after the England match anyway, I think people just kind of went, oh shit, we're not, you know, we're not the best team in the world. It's like it didn't sit well that we kind of were positive for that couple of months between the New Zealand match and the Six Nations, and then we just went way too far and have almost dismissed them. And it's like, I don't know, I really hope Ireland go and beat England, or, you know, perform well or do something magical this week or next week against Wales, because we need to start looking forward to this World Cup a little bit as a country. I just feel like it's going to sneak up on us, and we forget that this is a team that, you know, we still won 3 games in the Six Nations this year. We won the Grand Slam the year before. We beat New Zealand in November. It's not that far away. Like, we should be excited about the World Cup.
Yeah, there's something about it. There's a very kind of Basil Fawlty-esque quality to, I think, us as Irish rugby fans, where, or Irish sports fans in general, where success doesn't suit us. And we're very clear to just, like, go off the edge the minute anything goes wrong. Fuck it! That's it! It's all over now! We're done!
And then to have
this fatalism.
Like, yeah, and then to assume that we're going to lose every match by 20 points and then get a miracle win against somebody with a try in the corner in the last minute and think, oh, this is brilliant. Still not get out of the group or anything like that, but have that moment. We're not that bad. We're not that bad.
But Mick, we must move on from Robbie. What else is happening this weekend? It's your turn this week to get us hyped. This is a regular segment where we focus on some sporting event that not everybody may be paying attention to going into this weekend, but we will explain to you why it is the most important thing happening in your life over the coming days. So when you see Dre, a DJ on the mic, ask what
it's like we're getting hyped tonight. Cause if a strike, it ain't. Time to get hyped tonight. This is an easy one this week. This is the All-Ireland Ladies Football Semi-Finals.
I could guess that it was going to be that, because there's no doubt that this is probably the biggest sporting thing happening in Ireland this weekend. And it's a mouth-watering tie.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, two ties really, because you've got Galway and Mayo in the first semi-final, and that's good in its own way. Like, I mean, other than Dublin and Cork, who we'll get to, actually, they're the last two teams to win in All-Ireland. No team outside of these four teams have won the All-Ireland since 2001, but putting Mayo and Galway aside, one of whom will be in the final, and we'll talk
and
about
also,
them again.
Mayo last year's beaten All-Ireland finalist. Galway's this year's beaten. 2 years ago, and Galway's this year's beaten National League finalists.
Yeah, absolutely. So they have their own story, and it's going to be really interesting as well. But, you know, I think everybody's focus is going to be on Dublin and Cork, because, as I said, no team outside of the four has won since 2001. No team outside of Dublin and Cork have won since 2004. When Galway won it. And so, you know, just the story here, right? So obviously we've had our 50,000, and the finals attendances have been brilliant over the last few years for the ladies football. But what really, it's almost a real test as well to see how deep that support really is, because this is one of the matches of the ages, and sometimes they do come in semi-finals. That's just the way the world works. And, you know, This is a segment called Get Hyped. This is literally a call to get hyped about this game, because if this was the final, there'd be a lot more press about it, a lot more people would go, and they would bloody enjoy it, and it'll be one of the best sporting events of the year. But because it's a semi, it always has that danger to go under the radar. I just want to get a couple of stats about this game, and then you can tell me why. I know you're looking forward to it as well, actually, which is, I don't need to sell anybody on this particular one like you did last week with the golf. In 2005 to 2009, Cork won 5 in a row. In 2010, Dublin came in and won the All-Ireland, but they didn't beat Cork, they beat Tyrone. Tyrone had beaten Cork in the quarter-final. From 2011 to 2016, Cork won another 6 in a row. They'd won 11 out of 12. It's insane. It's the greatest. It's one of the best Irish sporting teams of all time. And then in 2017, Dublin came and won the All-Ireland, beating Mayo, but they didn't beat Cork because Mayo beat Cork in the semi-final. Yep. And that was the end of their amazing run. But last year, finally, Dublin did beat them. They beat them 3-11 to 1-12 in the All-Ireland final. It was 50,000 people in Croke Park. It was this incredible occasion. So it was the first time they'd beaten them in all of the runs. And those runs, most importantly, included 3 All-Ireland finals in a row, 2014, 15 and 16, where Dublin lost 3 finals by a combined 4 points. Weirdly, Dublin of ladies football up until 2 years ago were the Mayo of men's football. And just couldn't get over the line. And it's like, we had an interview up with Carla Rowe, who got the 2 goals last year, became the absolute superstar of Dublin football. alongside like Sinead Hearn, obviously, who gets like 2 goals, 2-7 regularly in games. But Carla obviously became a kind of a star that day, and she still talks about the hurt of those 3 finals, you know, and just how they just thought they were never going to get over the line, and Cork kept just pipping them at the post. So it's a huge rivalry. It's one of the best rivalries in sport. And now they're going to meet in the semi-final. Cork are rejuvenated. They got better last year than they were the year before and look better again this year. They're putting up huge scores. Dublin, kind of like, you know...
They're winning at their ease, but yeah. Some of them, like Westmeath, were in that game for a while and then sort of never looked like they're going to win it. But Dublin then won well enough. Same with the Kerry game, you know, it wasn't at the pace of what this game was going to be at this weekend. You look at Cork winning the National League. Look at they were beaten by Armagh in the group stages of the All-Ireland. But that being said, they were through already. They had a 17-18 point score difference. The way that works with 3 teams in a group, they were pretty much guaranteed. So they made some positional switches, rested a few players. So that you wouldn't read too much into that. They bounced back against Tyrone in the quarterfinal and had an incredible win. I think it ended up being like, it worked out at 39 points to 15 or so. It was even arguably more impressive than Dublin's win over Kerry. Like, there's just something about this Dublin team, though. It's mad the way, and maybe if they keep winning it, it'll end up being like with the men's team where you kind of want to see a change, or, you know, it'd be like if somebody don't want someone dominating for too long. And it is that kind of story that bleeds into it, if the 3 lost finals or whatever. But I just love this Dublin team. Yeah. There are so many players in it that their own story is so interesting. They had the documentary on RTE a couple of years ago after winning that first All-Ireland, and it was incredible. It was actually on repeat there a couple of months ago, and I ended up watching it again. You mentioned Carla Rowe there. Like, it starts in the first episode. Her was taken off because she wasn't doing what she was being asked of. She was kind of, even though she was still playing really well in the first game of the league, I think it was, or the championship, and then to turn around and have the season that she's had, of the last 2.5 seasons that she's had. There's so many sort of, like, Noel Healy is such a brilliant player. And again, it was, you know, the change of tactics up that they wanted her carrying the ball much more and running at defences rather than just getting and kicking it on or passing it on. Like, there are actually so many subplots even going into this game that you'd want to focus on as well.
They have a load of genuine stars as well. Like, if you watch one of those double matches, you don't know who is going to be the star of the day. Like, you know what I mean? Sinead Goldrick coming from wing back is somebody as well there who's, you know, I don't even want to go and name them all. It's just like they have this, like, kind of constant sort of conveyor belt of sort of, like, stars, as you said. Like, but then also they do probably have, you know, look, Cora Staunton, I think, genuinely has a rival in Sinead Hearn as the best ladies football player of all time. And I think that we should talk about that a little bit more as well, because her numbers and consistency and everything over the years are just, like, ridiculous and constant. And it's probably because she's not a one-woman team that we don't talk about it as much. But again, I would urge people to get down to Croke Park on Sunday if it's suitable to you, because I think it's going to be one of those sporting events that's just going to capture the imagination of anyone that's there, and you might miss it otherwise. That's the problem, you know. It'll be in the news and all, but it's not going to be the biggest story, unfortunately, and it probably should be.
I would take a price as good value for money as well, which is something we rarely say about sport these days.
And speaking of value for money, we've talked up Cork here. We've talked about how close these games generally are, right? If it wasn't for Carla's 2 goals last year, the game could have been a lot closer again last year. You know, they just have this thing. A draw is 9-1 on Ladbrokes. I'm just saying.
9-1.
Yeah, Dublin are 4-7 and Cork are 13-8. So Cork have a bit of value about them as well, but a draw is 9-1. You know, when we were talking about 9-1, like, it's always going to be around that. It's actually more 8-1 generally for a draw, you know. And the fact that I think this is a little bit of, like, thinking that Dublin are going to win, they just get that extra point here.
The Cork beat them by a point in the National League semi-final.
You're intrigued.
I thought you were going to ask me who's going to win it, and I couldn't call it.
Yeah.
So if you can't call it, you just obviously the hook.
Well, if you can't
Harry
call
Redknapp,
it.
The old Harry Redknapp trick, draw.
Yeah. Advice to listeners out there. One, to always please gamble responsibly. And two, I called the draw in the All-Ireland Hurling Final as well. And it was definitely not a draw. Tip won by 906 points, I think. But anyway, we'll see how it goes.
But after all that football chat, it's time to look at a bit of soccer.
More football.
I bet it's half.
Different football.
Sean Meehan.
Howdy.
Diehard League of Ireland fan.
You know it.
Diehard St. Patrick's Athletic.
St. Patrick's Athletic.
Yep, the fella in the green and white shirt. Sean Meehan is in studio with us to chat some football. Are you excited, Sean?
I'm not wearing a green and white shirt today.
No, it's green enough, though. It's got a hint of green,
actually. A hue of green. Yeah.
Before we start talking about the weekend's football, right, I know we're not going to talk full-on fantasy today, Mark, but I have a quick question for you as the fantasy guru, right? Can I do my wild card?
Two things. One, I've had such a bad start that I'm losing my guru status, I think.
You can still be a guru even if you're not playing well. It's just, you know, you just need to know what to do.
Yeah. I wouldn't be against you using your wild card this week. I was considering it myself. The only thing is, there are a couple of players that I would want to bring in on a wild card that don't have great fixtures. Like, the problem is people aren't playing the game right. And they haven't been playing the game right for a few years now, Mick. And there are things like Ceballos. I absolutely want to bring him in my wild card. I've got Callum Robertson, who was 5.5 million. Ceballos was 5.5 million. It's an obvious change, except for the fact that Arsenal have two really tough games coming up. So no person in their right mind would buy Ceballos going into these two games. And I would go wild card after those two games, and you can bring in your Pookies, whoever you want after that. But no, people had to be idiots, and everybody had to go buy Ceballos. And guess what? He's gone up in value. He's 5.6 million now, and I can't afford him. So you decide what to do. If you're wildcarding, maybe you need to
Are you saying that if other people played the... Are you like one of those poker players who plays the game and loses and then gets really annoyed because everybody isn't playing by the rules, so, and that's the reason you've lost, but they've all won money?
Well, if everybody played the game properly, we could all buy Ceballos at the right time rather than everybody buying him at the wrong time and then the fact that the people who were playing the game right...
But they've all beaten
you. Here's the thing is that, like, if Ceballos in the next two matches for Arsenal ends up, you know, gaining those people a load of points, then surely they're playing the game correctly, are they not?
No, because like...
Because they're not playing it to your rule book.
He's going
to
be their fifth midfielder if he's at 5.5. Maybe fourth, borderline fourth. He shouldn't be playing by right. He's there, you know, like, that shouldn't be where you're trying to set... Like, your fifth midfielder when you play a wild card, that's when you fix those issues. That's what I mean. You're going to have more prominent issues. You're going to need to replace, I don't know who... someone who's started off terribly, Bernardo Silva,
Tammy Abraham.
That these are the people that are going to be first in your list of agenda of things. If I have one transfer this week, I need to make. But like Simpson from Bournemouth, sitting on my bench for ages. Lundstrom there scoring a goal. I obviously need to replace him with Lundstrom. But and I had to go and do it. I had to drop 4 points this week to buy Lundstrom, who I'm not actually even going to play this weekend. But I had to do it because I knew he was going to go up in value because idiots keep buying him.
See, this is the thing, like. This just seems like blatant revisionism out of you. It's like you needed to buy a lad that was good last weekend. There's no guarantee that he's going to be good this weekend or continuing on to the future. But at the same time...
Mark is just pointing.
At the same time, like if you need to replace Abraham because he's shown nothing and he probably will continue to probably not do too much as Chelsea look for, you know, alternatives to him, then I can understand that. But, like, you can't blame other people for just playing the game the way they want to play it within the rules, might I add, within the rules.
This started off by me saying, we're not talking about fancy this week, can I play my wild card? And I, first of all, like to apologise to listeners for the sound quality of the last few minutes because I didn't expect Mark to start shouting into the microphone and popping the audio. And also, we've been down the Ceballos road, I think, far enough at this stage.
Yeah, final word of that I would say is that look at the international fixtures. They're coming up soon. That's always a decent time to play a wildcard round about then, if you can last that long.
Good advice.
Definitely, this week is a lot better than last week in terms of playing it.
Okay.
Now, real football. Sean, tell me what's going to happen this weekend.
I know we said that we weren't going to talk about Danny Ceballos. But the biggest match of the weekend is Liverpool-Arsenal.
Yeah.
And two teams that have 100% records, but like haven't really been that great. Like Liverpool, no, they're going to be slowly coming into the season. They've had a load of players that were busy during the internationals during the summer. Now they're coming back into the Liverpool fold. So it's going to take them a while to get into... up to gear, into speed, but
they're basically doing their pre-season in the Premier League at the moment. Yeah.
And the great thing for them is that they're good enough to do that. But now they're coming up against Arsenal, who are a team that you know, one thing about them is that they're not great defensively. That's one thing that you absolutely know for sure. Now, in fairness, they did try to, you know, bring in someone with a bit of Premier League experience in David Luiz.
It was funny thing. I was listening to the Eamon Dunphy's podcast, The Stand, and they were like, I can't remember if it was him or John was saying it, but John Giles was saying it, but they're like, Luiz has come in and he's improved the defence, which is saying something. Which is the best summary of the Arsenal defence I've heard.
Did anyone here watch, like, it was on live on the Saturday morning kickoff, Arsenal and Burnley?
Yeah.
You watched the whole thing?
Yeah, we were.
Right, okay. Because I didn't. I only watched Match of the Day. And for me, Arsenal were brilliant, but I only saw the highlights. But they look like the exciting early season Wenger era when, like, Fabregas was on the team. Like, style. Like, they definitely should have won more than 2-1, shouldn't they?
They definitely deserve to win, but that's kind of...
And the jersey is lovely.
The jersey is absolutely lovely. And is this going to be this weekend? It's going to be the first.
Yellow, yeah.
Oh, my. The bruised banana. Oh, they can't lose now. They can't lose.
They wore it against Newcastle at 1-1-0.
That doesn't count. Okay. That doesn't count. This is Anfield in the bruised banana. This is 1989 all over again, you know?
Yeah.
But I think Burnley...
The bruised banana. That's I don't think is. I've ever heard that before.
That's what it's called, is it not?
Yeah, it should be. I'm sure it is.
I think they definitely deserve to win. But Burnley had more shots. And I don't know whether it is with that kind of team. Even though they've never beaten Arsenal in the Premier League. It's one of those things that, like, every time they have a free kick around the box, you're like, fancy them to score here. And then they obviously did with Ashley Barnes scoring. But it's the same with, like, Liverpool only had one more shot than Southampton. Like, Liverpool were not good.
First half, Liverpool were cat.
And if Che Adams had a bit more Premier League football under his belt, he might have scored one.
Or if Danny Ings didn't miss an open goal, well, virtually an open goal.
Where's Shane Long?
He's on fire. And
he's not on fire.
Well, maybe then that's the issue.
He's been put out.
If you look at their team and you look at the strikers that they have, he's fourth.
Yeah. He shouldn't be fourth.
And also, Bufal was away on loan last season. And I think Hasenhüttl has a bit of time from his back now. And he could end up being left or right front.
Hasenhüttl, I thought, liked Long, though. That was the thing. Yeah. He prefers
Obafemi to Long. And the only reason Long got a run at the end of last season was because Ings wasn't really, well, like, had scored a few, but wasn't really doing it consistently. Didn't have Che Adams because he only came in the summer. And Obafemi was injured. And he wasn't playing Guido Carrillo anyway. So he was going to go for it in that way.
Or Charlie Austin.
Oh, God.
Yeah, he's gone. Look, I don't think Arsenal are going to win this game 5-1 on Ladbrokes. But a draw 7-2. It's weird that we're in a situation with Liverpool. We're talking about them in Cat in the first half. We're talking about, like, you know, what Southampton could have done to them. But you still kind of, I don't know, once they went 2-0 up, no matter how many, you know, Adrian's mistake and talking about them hanging on, you didn't ever feel like a Liverpool team that goes ahead, you trust them. They're at that elite level now that you trust them to go and close out a game. And, you know, as Sean was saying, like, they're good enough to play even at this half pace. But are they good enough to be a next level team like Arsenal, like a top six team? It's weird. At home, you kind of think they are. I think so. For me, this is a banker. Like,
to be fair, when we say they were Carver the first half, like, Southampton could turn out to be a very decent team this season. They have, like, if you take their form since Hasenhüttl took over, they definitely are. And it had all the signs of it. Like, going into that game, you're like, this is one where Liverpool could slip up. The fact that they came back so late from Istanbul, the fact that that game went to extra time and penalties. There was so much going against them there that you could completely have forgiven them for dropping points. And the fact that they didn't, performance or not, that I think speaks volumes of them. What's the total goals or over-under on the goals? Because one thing is they've been conceding chances. They've been conceding a lot more chances than they did last season, nearly altogether. And I'm looking at this that there could be four or more goals in this.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're looking at, like, 3.5 is kind of the par here. But yeah, over 3.5 is 11-10. Under is 4-6. If you want 4.5, 5-2 for over. 4-1, obviously, for under. 4-1 on, sorry.
We'll get to our 1-2-3 picks in a while. But my 1-2-3 pick would come in at over 4.5.
Okay, so that'll be a 5-2 shot. I don't know. That sounds like Liverpool and Arsenal from the old days. which is the great thing about this fixture. I love, like, it. For me, it just screams of
for all Andre
so Ashford. Many memories. It's just like Robbie Fowler scoring a hat-trick in 20 minutes. The match you mentioned, the 1989 game. Andre Arshav and that 4-4 draw, the most bonkers game in football ever. I think, though, more normally, it's like the better team goes and wins 3-0 or 2-0, don't they? Like, well, didn't they play very early in the season last year and Liverpool just had way too much for them?
Yeah, I think the one... early doors last season was kind of just Liverpool having bedded in and being the team that, you know, were so good the season before as well, that it was Unai Emery was still sort of relatively new to Arsenal,
and he had City and Liverpool in his first two games.
Exactly. So he didn't
Chelsea and Liverpool. No, it was City and Liverpool.
City and Liverpool. Yeah. So he didn't really like have time then in the Premier League season to kind of go, I understand this. Yeah, I understand this. But now I think Arsenal are going to be closer. I'm not saying that they're... I fancy Liverpool to come out victorious, but I reckon Arsenal could definitely score two.
This could be the best front three in the Premier League coming up against the second best front three in the Premier League.
Yeah, well, it Pepe's just depends
going to
on who
to settle in, but
when he came on against Burnley, he was very good. Yeah. I don't think you can kind of afford to play Reece Nelson in this match just to kind of appease the fans. Like you're going to want Pepe in there. You know, it's 72 million, regardless of how it's structured. It's still £72 million that he's worth.
Yeah. Anything else tickling your fancy this weekend in the Premier League? What's sticking out for you? There's one game actually sticking out for me before I ask myself the question. I mentioned at the start in our first ever episode, Mick, Brighton to finish top of the Southern teams. We've talked about Southampton there, right? Brighton face Southampton this weekend. The Southern teams, by the way, are Brighton, Bournemouth and Southampton. And Brighton were, I think...
South Coast teams, yeah.
South Coast teams. Somebody's winning this game 2-1. I don't know who's winning a 2-1, but somebody's winning a 2-1. And it's 21-20 for over 2.5 goals.
Somebody's winning a 2-1.
So I think there's going to be at least 3 goals in this game. Actually, there's going to be exactly 3 goals in this game.
So over 3.5?
Over 2.5.
Over 2.5.
That's my prediction.
Wow.
That isn't
I can see that.
It's got a bang of a 2-1 game of it.
Yeah, because I think Southampton will concede and so will Brighton, because Brighton are playing 3 at the back and they
total
have...
football.
But they have Shane Duffy playing as kind of a ball-playing centre-half. Mm. And there's one thing that Shane Duffy isn't. He's many things, but he is not a ball-playing centre-half.
Would Shane Duffy be a better ball-playing centre-half if he bent over and dribbled the ball with his head?
I reckon you're probably...
If he was at Sheffield United, he'd be doing that right now. that's a Chris Wilder one I've ever...
I want to go back to your South Coast bet, because you know what's going to happen here, don't you? It's going to come down to the end of the season. Brighton, Bournemouth and Southampton are all going to be on the same amount of points. And in the last game of the season, Portsmouth are going to come in with a steel chair and take out one of them. But who... Well, whose side are they on?
Oh my God, JR, it's David Connolly.
David Connolly?
Wearing a Southampton jersey, rips off the jersey to reveal his Portsmouth jersey and knocks
it. It's Hasenhüttl over there. Hasenhüttl. I think I've said his name 3 times on this podcast over the last 2 weeks, and never once has it been anywhere close to the one I said before.
looking down the leagues as well, here's another call. Formerly Frank Lampard's Derby County, are playing West Brom at home.
Philip Coco's Derby County now.
Give him the full title.
Oh, we call them futurely Wayne Rooney's Derby County.
Formerly Frank Lampard's Derby County, Philip Coco's Derby County, lost last night or Tuesday night to Bristol City. They're playing West Brom at home at the weekend. I'm still bearing a grudge from last year and Spygate and the playoff and all that. And I actually got an email in from Sean McGoey to the podcast asking, could somebody please ask Mark Faraday how that Leeds United documentary on Amazon Prime finishes from a disgruntled Derby County fan? Well, I'm having my revenge this weekend because I'm saying West Brom are going to beat Derby County at 7-4.
This is the thing. There's midweek matches in the championship as well, which could augur towards form and, you know, what might happen.
Sheffield Wednesday now top of the league. Managerless Sheffield Wednesday.
I mean, what's better than having Steve Bruce as your manager? Not having Steve Bruce as your manager. Well, West Brom are playing Reading during the week. And I fancied Reading for this weekend against Huddersfield, Huddersfield, who were also managerless.
Yep.
But I see West Brom beating Reading. Do I see them beating Derby? I mean, there's so many. It's early season.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah,
the championship's too unpredictable.
Also, I'm not basing this on any sort of fact other than I have a grudge against Derby County and they lost a game during the week. So I'm like, that's it. The wheels are coming off.
Two playoff teams last year. Speaking of Steve Bruce, though, I want to go back to this because can anyone guess what price Newcastle are to beat Spurs at the new White Hart Lane or whatever it's called this season, this weekend? I'll give you a clue. It's the biggest price of a Premier League team this weekend.
What do you reckon?
7-1.
I was going to go with 7 as well.
7-1, you say. Okay, right. I'll give you another clue. It's more than that.
Jeez.
10-1?
11.
14-1.
Jesus. Holy Christ.
Lads. It's not even Man City or anything. Like, it's Spurs on the back of, like, having 3 shots against Manchester City, one of which
was from the halfway
Pep
line.
Guardiola refused to count as a shot because, Harry Kane tried to beat Ederson from 100 yards out, and it didn't even go out of play, I don't think. So they had 2 shots against Man City, scored 2 goals, haven't played well at all this season, didn't play well against Villa, and, you know, Newcastle aren't going to beat them, but 14-1... Oh my God, Newcastle are a joke.
That brings us on perfectly to our 1-2-3 picks. So if this is your first time listening, you don't know what 1-2-3 is, it's a game that you can play on ladbrokes.com for absolutely free every single week. They pick out 3 games from the upcoming Premier League fixtures, and your task is to correctly predict the score in each of those games. If you correctly predict one of them, you win a €1 free bet. If you get 2 right, you get a €5 free bet. And if you manage to correctly predict all 3, you win €100 cash. Now, over the last 2 weeks, we've been playing this in the office. Everybody's been having a go. Our leaderboard update is interesting, particularly for the people in this room, because, Sean, you're like myself. You're still on a big flat duck. But, Mick, you have gotten off the mark and have surged in to an early joint lead, a lead alongside Morris Brosnan and Dylan Ryan, who got 1 right each in the first week. Gary Connaughton also correctly predicted Sheffield United to beat Crystal Palace 1-0 this week. So, yous are all tied together at the top of the table with 1 point each after 2 weeks, which is in many ways disgraceful, but in another way, well done.
Thank you. Appreciate it. And should we go and see if we can get 1 out of 3 again?
Yes, let's try it. So, this week's ties are Liverpool against Arsenal, Bournemouth against Man City, and Spurs against Newcastle. Sean, as you're new to the podcast, it's your first episode. I'm going to give you first go here. What are your predicted scores for these games, starting with Liverpool against Arsenal on Saturday evening?
Liverpool against Arsenal. I fancy goals. I fancy goals, goals, goals.
Same as myself.
And we're going to go 3-2 Liverpool.
Interesting. Very interesting.
Are you going to go for 3-2 as well? That's what I thought.
just the repetition of interesting was enough.
You're living off the past here.
Bournemouth against Man City, Sean.
Bournemouth against Man City. I'm going to go with Bournemouth 0.
Yes.
Manchester City 3.
3.
Yeah.
And Spurs against Newcastle?
5-0. 5-0 Spurs.
To Newcastle. 5-0. Poor Newcastle.
14-1, not tempting you there, no?
No, it isn't. It isn't. I want more goals. I want more goals. And I don't see Joe Linton scoring them.
5-0 would mean the Spurs would have to have 3 more shots than they had.
I'd be very disappointed if Joe Linton doesn't do something this year, though, because it's too good a name to be a Premier League superstar.
I agree, but like, by something, do you mean like off the wall? Because I reckon that man might have a tendency to just go.
Well, hopefully, right? I'd like to see that happen, but before he does that, he needs to get 10 goals and become a household face as well as name, because he's already a household name his name is deadly.
There's 2 things with him. One, I don't think he's going to have much opportunity to score a load of goals because the rest of the team are literally 40 yards away from him every time he's trying to get on the ball. And secondly, I mistakenly couldn't remember his name. I called him Franklinton. So I'm going to call him Franklinton forever now.
Franklinton. I thought it was Frankington, which is even funnier.
Franklinton. Okay. Mick, your picks. Liverpool against Arsenal.
3-1 to Liverpool.
3-1 Liverpool. Bournemouth, Man City.
4-0 to City.
4-0 to City. And finally, Spurs against Newcastle.
2-0.
2-0.
To the Spurs.
Would say to who? So my picks, 3-2 Liverpool against Arsenal. I'm going to just say 2-0 to Man City. I think Bournemouth are actually fairly decent.
They are, as they showed Villa this weekend. Exactly. But it doesn't matter when it comes to City. I just think when they're playing anybody outside of the top three, four, they're just going to break them all down and kill them.
And that's what I think. It's going to take a while to break them down, and they'll get a goal in the 55th minute, and then get another one before the end. It'll be 2-0.
Bournemouth, by the way, were like just watching them against, because obviously with the hopes and prayers of Aston Villa fans, watching them as they're such a perfect, like Eddie Howe is a really, really good manager, because they're such a, I have to say, like it was just so much kind of nous in their performance once they got lucky and went 2-0 up, and then just like controlled the game. Villa like got a great goal, but weren't they? But they couldn't get the ball for the last 10 minutes.
Yeah.
That's just like, I just think that's a really well drilled and well coached team. Actually, I was very impressed with them.
They could go. I initially had them in my teams to get relegated at the start of the year before before that happened. They could be one of those teams that are right up there with Everton, Leicester, and Wolves, just challenging.
Yeah, I've just predicted them to lose 4-0 at home.
Yep,
and then talk about how good they were.
Yep,
but that's just testament to how good Manchester City are, though.
And finally, I've gone with Spurs 4, Newcastle 0. So poor old Newcastle are losing 4-0, 5-0, or 2-0, depending on who you listen to.
So we all have Liverpool to score 3, we all have Bournemouth to score 0, and we all have Newcastle to score 0. Yep. So there's some consistency in these
picks. And we all have Liverpool wins, Man City wins, and Spurs wins, which isn't... You know, look, Liverpool-Arsenal could well be a draw. Or maybe Arsenal win it. Who knows? That's the fun of the game. You can get on to ladbrokes.com right now and play for absolutely free. As we said, if you correctly predict the score of one game, you get a €1 free bet. If you get both of two games, you get a €5 free bet. And if you get all three right, you win €100 cash. Sean, you've also been tasked with our big shout this week. The big shout is where we have to come up with a call for the sporting weekend that's 25-1 or over. We'll get to that in a second. But firstly, talking about big shouts, last week Hideki Matsuyama, we mentioned it earlier on the show, Mick, 45-1. He got it at top six finish that I so badly wanted. This weekend, it's the Tour Championship. The field has been cut. The FedEx Cup points have been totaled up. We've lost Shane Lowry, sadly. He finished outside the top 30 after the BMW Championship last weekend. But this is really interesting now because the points have been converted. The scores have been added up or added to players already before they even start this weekend. So
can I interrupt before you give me who, so I'm what? So the Tour Championship used to be a tournament, 30 people in it, and you won it, and that was its own thing.
It would add points.
And then you could also win the FedEx Cup, and oftentimes it was the same person, but not always. Sometimes, you know, somebody could come from nowhere, and the person finishes second, so they can't win. So, but winning the Tour Championship is a thing on its own. Is that gone now? Is it all FedEx Cup? So you...
Yes,
yeah, this is your score for the actual tournament.
So going into this weekend, your FedEx Cup, where you ranked in the FedEx Cup, rather than before, say, with the Tour Championship, if you won the Tour Championship, you'd get a load of FedEx Cup points, and that would affect where your final FedEx Cup standing was, and you could jump up to the top, near the top of the leaderboard. The way it is now is that it's done before going into the Tour Championship. So Justin Thomas finished top of the FedEx Cup rankings after winning the BMW Championship last weekend. So rather than his points total... It's just gone. It's taken, and he's given he starts on 10 under par going into the Tour Championship this weekend. Patrick Cantlay was in second. He starts on 8 under par. Brooks Koepka 7 under. Patrick Reed 6 under. Rory McIlroy then on 5 under. After that, so your top 30 all get a start, depending on where they finished, what they'll start on, whether it be 1 under, 2 under, and so forth. So that's what it's all about this year. So it's really interesting. So now, obviously, and you also have then a field in terms of, if you go on to Ladbrokes, you'll see there's to win the actual Tour Championship and then to win the 72-hole tournament, if that makes sense. So
they are two different things.
They're two different things. Well, they're two different things.
Oh, sorry,
no,
but
things
you
in
can
that,
bet on
yeah,
the,
to,
yeah, yeah,
over 72 holes so that everybody starts on par. So going into that, obviously, like we said, you're giving me a lot of credit earlier on for making good calls, but I have absolutely no clue what I'm talking about, apart from the fact that I just really like Hideki Matsuyama and he's serving well over the years. And also that I'd read sportsline.com where they'd simmed the tournament 10,000 times. Well, this week I've been doing a bit of reading around and there are a few people who've caught my eye. First of all, Hideki. We can't leave him off now. He did well last week for us.
To ride him, as they say in...
Sorry. Sorry, I'm going to...
Sorry, no. I mean in a gambling sense.
Anyway, We're going to move on. I think he's 33-1 and he starts at 3 under par, Mick. Also, Mick, if you can get your mind out of the gutter for all of 2 seconds. Xander Schauffele, he will start on 4 under par given his FedEx Cup ranking, and he's 28-1. And there's been a lot of support from people in the know on the line. I've been reading some articles on the line, and Xander Schauffele is getting a lot of support. He's also 22-1 to win over 72 holes, which is, like I've mentioned, everybody starts a par. So I'm
impressed you know how to pronounce his name.
Thanks very much.
So that's a good enough reason to support him this week, I suppose.
Rory McIlroy is also the favourite to win over 72 holes, if anybody's interested in what Rory has.
So Rory's 5 shots off. How much do they win now? 15 million has gone up to, is it?
Millions and millions.
Yeah. Oh, God.
It's a rake of money.
Sure, he won it.
So what would you do with it?
He won it 3 years ago? 3 years? He definitely won it. Yeah.
It was 10 million then, so.
Yeah, it's gone well up now.
Rory is, he needs another injection into the bank account, I think.
Speaking of winning millions, though, it's time for the big shout.
All right, hold it. David. Just hold it, Alan.
Push him out.
Steady, David, don't. Get round. No, don't. Bloody.
So like we mentioned, the big shout is where we are tasked, or everybody is tasked, every listener as well, you're tasked as well, with coming up with a prediction that's 25-1 or more for the upcoming weekend. If you've got any prediction like that, make sure to email thegaffer@balls.ie, tweet us @balls.ie, or get onto us on Instagram or Facebook or wherever. Because if you correctly give us a shout at something that is 25-1 or more and it comes off, you would win yourself 2 cakes and a sports biography. The prize that is coveted by everybody on these islands.
Yeah.
We've had a couple of predictions in this week. None of them came even close. Our own didn't come close, Mick, like we mentioned earlier on. Your accumulator was
close enough.
Disastrous.
I disagree.
Sean, this week you've been tasked with it. What is your prediction? Right. What's your big shout?
So for the 2 cakes and a sports biography, I've gone for a double. Which has come to a grand total of 36.2-1.
Oh.
Right.
Very exact.
I like it. It's our lowest odds yet, actually, for this now segment.
The first one, this is sort of like the banker aspect of the double. We're all well aware that Newcastle are goosed. We all agreed to that.
Don't back them at 14-1.
Oh, I didn't. Don't worry. Spurs over 1.5 goals in the first half. That comes to 21-10.
Nice. I like this.
I like it. Yeah. It's a big shout, but it's a reasonable one.
Now, the second one, this is all gut instinct and what I feel may happen. In Manchester United versus Crystal Palace, Wilfred Zaha likes dribbling the ball. He's quite good at it, and he gets fouled an awful lot. Probably the most in the Premier League for getting fouled. If they foul him in the box, what's that known as in the industry?
VAR.
It's called a penalty. Yeah. It's called a penalty.
How did he manage to get that wrong?
Well, I was joking, but go on. It was obviously a shit joke, sorry.
So I've gone for Luka Milivojevic to score and Crystal Palace to lose.
Wow.
At 11-1. Because he takes all of their penalties. Yeah. He's quite good at taking penalties.
He is possibly the best penalty taker. And now, we said we weren't going to get into discussion about United penalty taking situation. So let's not.
Excuse me for that. But this is not a United penalty taking situation. This is a Palace penalty taking situation.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say that. We're locking into that. But when it comes to Palace, he is probably the best penalty taker in the league.
Yeah. So his industry is scoring goals from 12 yards out, and he does it quite well. Now, this is all, you know, sort of based on, you know, Crystal Palace actually getting a penalty, him being on the pitch, and there for not to be an incident whereby Zaha wants to take it. Hopefully that doesn't occur. Hopefully they get a penalty. Milivojevic scores, but it's not enough. It's like a consolation penalty.
2-1 United, 3-1 United.
Exactly. Something like a handy scoreline like that.
This is the
most... It's not bad.
It's literally... Whatever it's going to come off, whether it's going to come off or not, it's definitely the most intriguing big shout we've had so far. My one was off the wall. It was never going to happen. Mixed. There was too much going on there to follow. And, like, I mean, the dog and his mother would predict some of them wins that you had. But
United are also playing before Spurs. They're playing on Saturday, which means that United Palace game, like up until the last minute, is going to be intriguing all the way through as we wait and see do Spurs do the job in the first half. Though,
it's like Sean made such a good argument convincing us that we're going to win a penalty because Zaha's going to be playing and Zaha likes to dribble and people foul him. But if that was the case, you could say that literally going into every Crystal Palace game in the Premier League.
Well, Zaha against his old club as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So he's going to want to put
club
on a
that
show.
Rejected him.
yeah, will he have his revenge this weekend? But look, at Sean, that's a great big shout. Like we're saying, if you have any big shouts that you want to send us, make sure to email thegaffer@balls.ie. Also, if you're having a bet on any of these things or any other big shouts you come up with, make sure to gamble responsibly. Obviously, this is just a bit of fun, and the likelihood of these things coming off is, as the odds would show, very, very, very slim. But that is it from us this week. Thank you very much for listening. Make sure to subscribe to, we actually have our own podcast feed now and everything, the build up. If you search it on all good podcast apps, you'll be able to find it there. You can also, of course, subscribe to us through the balls.ie podcast feed. Just search balls.ie podcast on all good podcast apps. Be sure to rate the show, leave a review as well. And as we said, follow us on all our different social media channels. And until next week, enjoy the sporting weekend and mind yourself.